This is Bradley from the band Melander, and this is the Pennsylvania Rock Show.
Visit us at www.podcastyourscene.com.
Yeah, the local media has an agenda that they're going to serve. I don't know who's in charge of it or what it is, if it's like a headless monster.
Why? This is a question.
Walking backwards. Yeah. Something sacred.
I don't know the names of the creep songs. Those
running
are
in circles.
Just pop in and let play.
Sea of Glass.
It's the Flight and the Fall.
I love Ozzy. I think he's the true definition of a rock star. I heard a comedian talk about him and Michael J. Fox. You know, the world, something's wrong with the world when Michael J. Fox is all screwed up and Ozzy's fine.
Hey, it's Bill, and you're tuned into the Pennsylvania Rock Show, featuring the best unsigned rock and metal that Pennsylvania has to offer, right here on PARockShow.com, MegaRockRadio.net, 107.1 FM, St. Louis, Missouri, AltRockRadio.ca, XRPRadio.com, and I feel like I forgot one. I probably did. But if you go to PARockShow.com and click on radio schedule, you will see all of the affiliates and where and when you can hear the show. This is episode number 478, and with me tonight is Erica from Working Breed. How are you tonight, Erica?
I'm great. How are you?
I am busy.
Yeah, me too.
I gave you that if the best scenario when I would be home, 8:25 is when I got home.
Oh my goodness. That's a few hours off for those who don't know.
But it is what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're busy because you're doing a lot of good stuff. So, you know, that's good. Ultimately, that's good.
So your band, Working Breed, is having a CD release tomorrow.
Yes.
What can you tell me about that release?
Oh, it's going to be the best party we ever threw yet, for one thing. It's a release, it's an album release party. So we have this new album called Hieroglyphica, and we've been working on it for 3.5 years, and it's finally done, and it sounds really, like, we just are really, really happy with how it turned out. And we have got it on vinyl and CD, and we got new t-shirts, and then we plan this party, and the party has Cello Fury opening for us. They're like heavy metal on cellos, which is really cool. And they have David Throckmorton on drums with them too on this night. So he's an amazing jazz drummer in Pittsburgh, legendary. And so they're going to play first, and then we have like a sideshow clown circus kind of thing called the Stranger Dangerous Circus Sideshow. And they're going to do things like sword swallowing and escaping from straitjackets and something called the West Nile Challenge, where I think it's kind of a slapstick thing where they battle against a mosquito. Okay. So it's just a kind of a fun variety thing. And then we're going to come on stage and we're going to play our entire album in order, and with guest musicians to kind of fill in the extra horns that we put on the album. And there's cello on the album, so we have a cellist coming to play with us also. We have a saxophone, Roger Romero. We have a cellist, Jacob Nathanson. And we also have, like, this whole theme going on. So we're, like, these ancient troubadours who are, like, you know, given a chance to save humanity, I guess you could say. And we have props involved, and they light up, and that's as much as I'll tell you because I want you to come to this show and just experience it.
So,
and where, the, on the, go
where,
ahead, sorry.
Where is the show at?
The show is going to be at Thunderbird Music Hall. So they just recently renovated everything. And so we're going to do it in the back area. It's really beautiful and big now. It's like you walk in from the front bar and you're on the second floor balcony looking down on the stage. It's kind of like, you know, the bar version or the music venue version of when you go through the Fort Pitt Tunnel and you pop out and you're up high and you can see Pittsburgh and it's beautiful, you know, and you're over the river and suspended. And so it's like very, it's very cool to like come in and see that. And we have, you know, a lot of special things planned to kind of make it a little extra special. It's already so beautiful by itself. It needs no adornment, but we adorned it a little bit anyway. And yeah. And the other thing I wanted to mention too is that the whole night is emceed by local comedian Ian Ensect. And he's like the rug that ties the storyline together across the whole night. So yeah, it's going to be fun. It's going to be really fun and different. You know, we wanted to have a little bit of different things for different people. So maybe, you know, maybe everybody gets to see a little bit of something they've never seen before.
Speaking of different, I wish I could remember the name of the song. I watched a music video from you.
Oh, yes.
Everybody was dressed in white, if I remember correctly.
For part of it, yeah.
remind me what song that is.
That song is called Turtle Race.
Okay. And now here's my question, because Jonna and I discussed it one night.
Yes.
We're really not sure what happened in the video.
I know. Well, here's my problem is that I'm a storyteller, but especially during this era of songwriting, I was, I think, a little shy to share my feelings in a really raw way. So they're all there, but they're like tucked under layers of metaphor and meaning, you know, and symbolism. So, so I understand why you'd be like, what just even happened to me right now? I don't even know. But do you want me to explain the storyline of the Turtle Race music video?
Sure.
Okay. So Turtle Race is a song that is about my feelings after I got divorced, and it was a painful divorce, just like all divorces suck. I mean, it doesn't matter what the circumstances are, what really happened, how mature anyone is. Like, they all really hurt because your identity is like all coiled up with another person, and then you separate from that person and you have to figure out what's you, what's them, who you are. It's just, it's hard. And I had a lot of pain about that, and I had a lot of healing to do. And so the song is about the pain, like representing the pain, and then ultimately it's about the healing process and like what I did personally with that pain. Okay, so that's the basic thing you need to know. But the music video, how it explains it is there's three versions of me, Erica. There's a real life Erica, and she's like the one who's, I don't know, she's like in the robe at the beginning, and she's the one with the husband who's around. And then there's this mind Erica who's dressed in black, and she's in chains, and she's with the band, and she's the lead singer in the music video. And she represents the painful feelings that real Erica has, that real Erica is ignoring because she doesn't want to feel that way. But it's like the depression and the sadness and the pain. And she's down there and she's sad and she's singing all these sad lyrics. And then there's this one that's dressed in white, and she's Astral Erica is what we called her. I worked on this with director Eric Lorenz. He's a friend of the band's and mine personally. And he was really so great at helping me work this storyline. The three different Ericas were actually his idea in the first place, and it just maps so well onto how the meaning of the song is. So the Astral Erica is, she's like the intuition. She can go anywhere. She can see anyone. She follows the husband. She gets in the car with him. He doesn't know she's there, but she can see him. He follows her. Okay.
This
she
is making him. A lot more sense now.
Yeah. So she follows him, and she, you know, she's like on top of him when he's doing that other chick, not to give too much away, but he goes over to some other chick's house, and like Astral Erica is on top, and they don't even know she's there, but she's there singing the backup vocals, and she can sing the backup vocals to the real Erica, who's, you know, the ignorant one, and real Erica can kind of hear her. It kind of represents the intuition, like, you know what reality is, you know, mm-hmm. And sometimes you don't really want to see it, and you kind of go into an ignorant mode, and you sort of build a different way that reality is so that you can survive, you know? And so there's a point in the song where it transitions into this very, you know, the beginning of the song is this like a death march, and it's doom and gloom. And then it switches into this really fast rhythm. And I have a lyric. I don't know. Can I say expletives or not? I don't know.
just avoid the big one.
Okay. So if you love somebody, you're, you know, fill in the blank. It's not good. and I sing that over and over in the middle section. And what happens in the video is it's like real Erica wakes up, and she realizes what's going on, and she gets really mad. And she goes through the anger phase of grief, and she suits up. She gets in this really cool outfit. She puts on makeup. She has her hair in a ponytail. It's all tidy and, you know, ready to go rock and roll. And she goes into the shed, and she finds a weapon. And then she goes over to their house, you know. Mm-hmm. And you're like, what is she going to do? And she finds them. And the band is there helping her find them. They're like walking through the house kind of ghostly, like showing me where to go. And then I find them, and then you don't see what happens. And then it goes back to the slow plotting part of the song. And you kind of, I don't know, I'm kind of describing the whole thing here, but in
that's
the end,
good because it's all making sense now.
Yeah. So ultimately what happens is she sees them, and you don't see what she decides to do, whether she decides to go at them with the crowbar or not. But
I'm assuming since I'm talking to you that part didn't happen.
In real life, no. Yes. This is like it's just like a. It is. It's weird because it's like a little version of my life, like a little mini documentary about my life. But the you know, the people and places, it's not exactly the same as what happened. And, you know, it's not about them as nearly as much as it is about me and my feelings, you know? So I tried to not be, you know, too on the nose with anything regarding the actual situation, but, you know, it's like ish, like this ish, but there was no crowbar or threat of any kind of violence whatsoever. Like I never did any of that. It's more like what I think, you know, like what you feel like doing, you know what I mean?
Right.
You feel like going and kicking some butt, you know? So, but what happens ultimately is she decides not to, do anything. And she realizes this is more of a journey about herself, or you could say, I realize this is more of a journey about myself. And, what you see in the video during this part of the song is that the one that's dressed in white, that's the intuition type person, she, Astral Erica, goes to the one that's trapped in the basement, who's like all chained up and miserable and depressed, the mind Erica, and she unchains her and frees her, and they sing to each other. And then the real life version of Erica is free from all of these binds and can go forth into the future without that. And so she sheds her badass clothing, because she doesn't need them anymore, because they were actually just a mask to make herself feel stronger than she was. And now she realizes she can just go and be vulnerable in the world. So she literally takes her clothes off and walks away. And that's the end of the video. And that's me. I mean, it's she, but it's me.
I feel like I need to ask this question of every band I talk to now, because that was awesome.
Well, I have a purpose for literally everything that's on the album, every single thing in that video, like every choice, every decision, everything on the album art, it all has meaning. Like I just tuck it in anywhere I can, you know, like I'm like the name of the album Hieroglyphica. That's the name of a species of cicada that I grew up listening to in Florida.
Okay.
And the reason why the cicada is important is because we have a song on the album called Cicada, which is the one with the musical saw in it. And the musical saw is an instrument, is played sort of like how a cicada makes its noise. Mm-hmm. But also the song is using the cicada life cycle as a metaphorical reference to a kind of love relationship where you experience it for a short period of time, and then it seems like it just goes away, and then, you know, like years later it reignites suddenly for some reason, you know, and you're like, you remember each other, and you know,
not
you
every
just,
17 years though, right?
I mean, yeah, the joke I never make, because I'm afraid I'm just afraid to make this joke, like, knock on wood, I hope this isn't true, that the album took so long to finish, like I hope it's not like every 17 years we finally finish an album, you know.
If you hold that thought for just 1 second.
Sure.
So in episode number 476 we played Cicada, so if you are listening now and you want to hear that song as well, it's the very last song in episode 476.
Yeah. Thank you for including it there.
That out there. I don't remember who I talked to in episode 476.
I think you were talking to Jonna.
Was it Jonna? Yeah. Yeah. You're right. It was Jonna. And then last week was, holy cow, my brain is so fried right now. why don't I remember? It was Alyssa Joseph from Philadelphia. Well, she grew up in New Jersey. That's where her parents live. She went to school in Philadelphia, so she was playing in the Philly scene. And now she lives in Nashville as of last week.
Oh, wow.
So we squeezed her in as a Pennsylvania artist because she actually, wait a minute, ready for this? She has a New Jersey band. She has a Philadelphia band, and she is building a Nashville band.
All right. She gets there. You got to have band everywhere you go.
So depending on where she is at the time, she will have a different band that will play with her.
That's smart.
That took me way too long to remember that that's who it was. I literally recorded it on Friday.
Oh, my gosh.
Thursday. But I've been doing a lot of recording.
Yeah.
Also have my other podcast, Three Questions and a Song. That one, I don't do as many episodes. I do the 1st and the 15th every month.
Oh, wow.
But for some reason, that 15th one almost always falls within a day of having to do a Pennsylvania Rock Show.
Wow. Typical. But, when it all comes together at the same time.
But it works out. And it gives... that one gives me a little more leeway. I can talk to anyone. Whereas this show, the Pennsylvania Rock Show, I kind of pigeonholed myself and talk about Pennsylvania bands and rock or metal. You know, so I emphasize that in the intro now.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's funny.
But,
well, I'm glad we qualify.
Listen, before I started Three Questions in a Song, I would play anything and just tell people, hey, we're going to listen to reggae today because I said so. Now I have a separate podcast for that stuff.
Nice.
So tell me a little bit more about the Hieroglyphica album. Where can people get it? You mentioned it took a while to record. Is there a reason? Like, did something happen?
Well, I mean, yes. But one thing that happened was first I'll answer the first part of the question. So if anybody's like dying to listen to it, it'll be released on August 24th and you'll be able to hear it on Spotify, iTunes, everywhere online that you would normally go to find music, and also on our workingbreed.bandcamp.com zone. And also at any of our shows we'll be selling vinyl and CD versions of it too. So there's that bit. But what happened with the album was when we started it was going to be just three songs. We were going to just do an EP. And also my dad had just been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer and I was kind of just selling everything. I got rid of my apartment and I was moving down there. I was like kind of nomadically spending most of my time down there and then coming up I'll come up every 6 weeks or so. We'll have some gigs. We decided at that time that we would start the album. We started it right before I left for Florida and we recorded the drum tracks and did all the basic stuff because some of the stuff they could do without me, you know, like the tracking of different instruments that weren't me, they could be doing while I wasn't there. And so we were kind of really slowly working on this three song EP. And then we just, over time, we just started adding other songs to it. We were like, oh, we should put this song on there. Oh, now we might as well add a couple more songs, you know? And then it became seven songs. And we said, okay, no more songs because our songs tend to be, we have quite a few long songs. And like 7.5 minutes, like that Turtle Race song is 7.5 minutes long. It's really long. And so we can only fit seven songs on a record. So there's a cap, you know, it's only physically so big. So
because,
we had to say,
because the disc will only hold so much data.
Exactly. Yeah. Like it's just, you know, a physical thing. So, we said, okay, no more. We're going to stop there. But seven songs and at the rate that we were doing it, you know, because I was coming in and out of town all the time. And my dad, he lasted for like a year and a half, which was really amazing for pancreatic cancer. And, you know, but there were like months where I would be gone because I was just spending all my time with him. So it wasn't till I got back that we really started kind of cooking on it. And then it's just, you know, it's like we wanted it to be so perfect too. I have a perfectionism problem. And, you know, if it's not perfect, I'm like, I know if I just do one more thing, I can get there. You know, if I do one more take, we were all just like getting things to be not totally perfect, actually, because I think if it's too perfect, it's not interesting anymore. So there's that element, but I would hear, like with Turtle Race, I could hear that we needed a harp. I could hear we needed strings, you know? So I'd be like, wait, I'm going to find some string players. I'm going to find a harpist, you know? And then we, like with a harp lady, we went to her house and we took the whole computer there to record her harp at her house because it's difficult. And it actually damages the harp every time you move it. I didn't know this stuff. Yeah, like I learned so much about different instruments through doing this project. And we recorded chimes from a guy who has a place called Liveberg Studio Chris Lea. Yep. So he has these cool chimes, and
he has been on the show.
Has he? Okay, he's a really swell guy. We really love him, and he has these chimes at his house out there, and we wanted to record the chimes for Daffodil. Like, we just got in our head, that sound would be perfect. So things like this would delay us because we were just so sure, you know, it's a concept album, and we were just so sure when we needed some specific kind of thing to go in there that we had to make it happen, you know? So we would take the extra time to add all of those elements so that it was really rich and flavorful as a final piece of work. And so, you know, between all those things taken together end up adding up to 3.5 years is what it is. So, yeah. But then we finally finished it. We can't even believe it. And we didn't kill each other, which is amazing. But for example, the musical saw is really hard to mic up for recording. And we tried lots of different microphones. We tried different angles. We tried different placements. We tried different numbers of microphones. So I played that part like so many times. Like, I mean, so many times. And every time it's a Wiley instrument too. So, you know, sometimes I'd be like, it wasn't perfect. You know, it wasn't what I wanted, you know, so I'd have to do it again. So, you know, it's just, I think this is something that it should never take this long, but because we took as long as we did after we passed a certain point, we just knew we might as well take all the time we need.
Yeah.
Because it's going to turn out amazing, you know? So, and we did that, and it turned out to be exactly what we wanted it to be.
All right, so here's a question that I didn't think that I would ask, but I've always wanted to ask, like Guns N' Roses when they do Patience, and so when you record this stuff with all the extra musicians,
yeah,
how do you pull that off live then when they're not with you?
Yeah, so we actually thought about this a lot when we were recording, like because I play the horn too, like I play the trombone and the trumpet, and I didn't want to place a bunch of horns in parts of songs where I am singing because I can never do that live. You know, like I've tried to play trombone and sing at the same time and it just doesn't work. So, and that's kind of a joke, but also true. But anyway, for the album release, for the little pieces that there are like that, we have invited, like I said, Roger Romero on the sax and, Jacob on the cello. But even if they weren't there, the core spirit, we were really careful to make the core spirit of the song be something that we can accomplish always as a five piece. And so we have always just made sure that that was true. So that anytime you come to see a live show, even if what you heard and you got used to was, you know, Turtle Race with a string section and the harp, that when you come to see us and you see it live, you'll still be satisfied because of the way that we do it in this other context, you know? So it's a little bit of a different version, but it's, you know, still going to, we promise it'll still be, you know, really good.
One more question in this segment.
Okay.
So we're playing my Chimera. I'm going to say that wrong.
My Chimera.
Chimera. What can you tell me about that song before we go and listen to it?
Sure. So this is another example of metaphors on metaphors on metaphors, which is this represents my past songwriting. My future songwriting, by the way, I'm endeavoring to be a lot more raw and direct. Like that's like, you know, take more risks by being more direct in this way. But I love language and I love science. I'm a scientist, and the chimera, the idea of a chimera is really interesting to me. In mythology, it's like a half lion, half, I think it's like three different animals smushed together in Greek mythology. It's a lion, a serpent, and something with wings, eagle or something like that. And falcon maybe. Anyway, in science, it's used as a DNA kind of thing so that it's possible genetically to have a single organism that has two different DNA strands inside of it. So that'll have like cells of two different DNA strands. So it's almost like it's two different beings, but it's definitely all inside of one being.
Like gene splicing?
Kind of. It's kind of like gene splicing. Well, I don't know. It's an organic process that can happen in any animal. So there are human chimeras, but a lot of times you'll see them in like cats. because they often have like two dads and stuff like that. So the a cat with two different color eyes, sometimes that happens because they're a chimera and they literally have two different sets of DNA inside of themselves. I kind of took that idea and thought about, like, if I had a chimera that was more of a metaphorical chimera, this would be like the sprightly being that's inside of me that kind of drives my decisions. You know, it's like the whimsical part of me, or also it can be the parts of me that are, that don't make sense when you put them together. Like sometimes you're happy and sad at the same time, you know, and you feel weird because you should just be one way, mm-hmm. but actually it's okay to feel inconsistent ways. Like that's really natural. And because we try to think we're supposed to be one way or another, we tend to discount our own things that are going inside of our heads. And the song is kind of about not discounting that, but like letting that exist. And as that exists, I'm calling that existence of something like that as a chimera. So she's my chimera. So I basically, the song I'm just singing about all these different, you know, different versions of what's going on inside my head. Like she's like this and she's like that. She's, you know, kind of crazy like this and she's kind of sad like this. And, you know, she's like, sometimes she's things that I feel like I'm not, like, sometimes I don't feel like super feminine, you know, like, and she's just like super feminine, you know, she's like all about pink and bows and whatever. And like, you know, normal me is like, I don't like bows, screw bows, you know. I don't know, like it's kind of silly, but you know, it's
kind of like watching my twin daughters.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it's like two different things are going on, but they're kind of the same, you know. Mm-hmm. And so that's what the song is. It's a very, I don't know, it's like a really, I don't know, probably opaque metaphor landscape to be walking around in, but it's just different kinds of ways that I feel, but that they're all me, but I'm kind of calling it this whimsical inner being who is me, but is also sometimes not that useful because if I always did what my inner being wanted to do, I probably wouldn't have a job. I probably wouldn't, you know, have a boyfriend, you know, like there's all these things that wouldn't work out for me. And so she's not always helpful. So it's kind of like that war between that, you know, basic desire type stuff and like what you tell yourself you should actually be doing. Yeah. I don't know. It's hard to describe.
I'm going to have to go back and re-listen to all of this.
I know. I'm so sorry.
No. Cause like now that I know how deep you're going, it might make more sense.
Maybe. I don't know. It's probably, I decided at some point that other people, when they listen to songs, they hear what means something to them. Right. Yeah. And they have their own interpretation process. And so there's not really a utility to me trying to control their interpretation by overwriting it, you know? And so I just, rather than try to make sure everyone knows what I'm talking about all the time, I just talk about what I need to be talking about at that time. And that's what goes into the song. And that's how I put so much of my energy and soul, and also that's how it is so healing for me, because music is just an awesome way for me therapeutically to express myself. And if other people don't totally get it, it's okay, but I want them to be getting something for themselves. So I hope that they hear some element and say, groovy, I like that, or, oh, I totally felt that way, or, you know, this meaning something to me in my life in this other way. But I know it's like so particular to my own life that, you know, no one's ever going to probably ever feel everything that I'm feeling from my song.
Okay. Let's take a few minutes to listen to I cannot say that. My chimera.
Yeah. It's like a book. Okay. Sounds good.
And, we will be right back.
She's my chimera.
Hey, this is episode number 478 of the Pennsylvania Rock Show. With me tonight is Erica from Working Breed, and you just heard their song My Chimera off of their brand new album, Hieroglyphica. Did I say that one right?
Hieroglyphica.
Nice. Which she explained earlier is a breed of cicada. Breed? That's probably not the right word. But anyway.
Species?
Species. Thank you. So we talked a lot about the album and the storylines behind a few of your songs, but let's learn a little bit about you in this segment.
Sure.
So if I was going to go on tour with you, let's say I'm documenting the Working Breed's tour.
Yes.
And I'm on the bus with you. What would the soundtrack be for our trip?
Well, there'd probably be some Motley Crue, I'm guessing. We really love, sometimes we moonlight as Motley Crue cover band. So that's like a sneaky side thing. You know, rock and roll probably for the most part. And then we like to play games in the van too. Like, so part of the backdrop would be us playing games, I think. like we'll pick like candy bars and be like, let's, everybody has to name a candy bar, and then we just go around and around and around and around. And then you, really, you know,
I've been sitting here through this whole interview and I'm like, wow, Aiden is so much like you. He does that stuff all the time.
wait, isn't he like less than 9 years old or something?
He's 11.
He's 11. Okay. And, so I'm like an 11 year old. And he picks things like,
or he's like, I won't say your age, but.
Oh, no, I don't mind saying my age.
So for those of you listening, tomorrow is Erica's 40th birthday.
That's so, right. Yay. Birthday. Woo.
But,
I still play games about candy bars. So
well, he does like name amphibians or.
Yes.
Or we have to go through the alphabet, and for every letter you have to say an animal that starts with that letter, or a type of vegetable that starts with that letter.
Yeah, no, that's totally like, these are the kinds of games that I'm like, hey, everybody, let's do this in the car while we're driving. Yeah.
And maybe it's the trumpet thing.
It could be. Yeah, he's my trumpet, secret trumpet chin.
Okay, so Motley Crue kind of caught me off guard.
We love rock and roll, and rock and roll, 80s stuff. We love that stuff. Hair metal, you know, because Mike Dugan on the guitar, he can play any of that stuff. Like, he's just so good. And I know our sound is like it's varied. Like, we go through all these different genres, and part of that is because we each have different influences in our background. So, you know, it's hard to say that we would pick one thing in the car that we would listen to or in the van while we were driving around, because we each have such kind of different interests. And so when we play together, what we do when we're writing together is they all come together in a way that, you know, we don't say we're going to go for one thing. We say, let's put together what it is that we each bring to the table. And that's why the music sounds so different.
I have seen Motley Crue live twice.
Oh my God. That's so cool.
And, the first time I count as the weirdest show I ever saw. And the second time, my wife was with me and told me she would never watch them again.
Oh my gosh. Well, was this while they were in their heyday?
No, the first time I went with my brother, that was, Carnival of Sins. Have you seen them live?
No, I haven't. Okay. I wish.
So Carnival of Sins, they were the only band on the bill.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just it was odd. There were monitors all over the stage, mm-hmm. and there were videos playing the whole time, and like heads were exploding on the videos.
Oh, wow.
There were women hanging from silk doing like the Cirque du Soleil thing over the stage. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Uh-huh.
At one point, a woman on stilts in a big hoop skirt came walking out on stage, and she stopped, and a little person walked out from under her hoop skirt.
Wow.
And handed Vince Neil an acoustic guitar.
It
was just, I mean, the music was great, but my brother and I kept looking at each other going, what are we watching?
No, this is like... That's like our show that we're going to have, this party that we're having for our album release is not dissimilar from that. I mean, it's not going to be as grand because we don't have a bazillion dollars, but with the budget that we have some weird stuff like that. And somehow I'm not surprised to hear that Motley Crue show is like that. But I love how theatrical they are. And,
yes.
When we did a tribute show one time, and we were Motley Crue, and I dressed up as Vince Neil, and we had costumes like the Shout at the Devil cover, and it was so much fun, and it really got me into dressing up as Vince Neil. I was like a lady version of him, which is funny because he's kind of like a lady version of himself also. But I was even more ladylike than his ladylike version of himself, and because I was a woman. And what I realized, though, as I was kind of trying to do his shtick, you know, and I was going all over the stage doing my thing, and I had a what do you call it, a cod piece on, which was really bizarre. But
okay.
As soon as I put it on, I was like, wow, I feel so powerful and like I can go anywhere on this stage. And I realized that as a woman, I was, even though I was on the front person of my band and I write almost all of the lyrics and everything, I still was not going all over the stage wherever I wanted to go. I would just stay in a little spot, you know, my spot. And I thought, wow, that's kind of messed up that I had to like put on a codpiece and pretend to be a man for a minute to realize this. And ever since then, I've been so much more free to go where I want on the stage, you know, as my normal self, and to do the things that I want to do as a performer, you know, and not question myself as part of like a woman shouldn't be doing this kind of a thing, mm-hmm. you know? And it was kind of really empowering. And so, I don't know. I joke around that I dressed up like Vince Neil and a little piece of his psychology stayed in my head or something.
Can you tell me something embarrassing that's happened on stage with your band?
Embarrassing? Let's see. Probably there's wardrobe malfunction type options to tell you about. Mostly they would be like that. Or, you know, sometimes every once in a while we like mess up playing a song or something and it doesn't go how we want it to go. And that's personally embarrassing, but I don't think anyone ever really notices for the most part. So that's usually when I'm most embarrassed. Or, oh gosh, I don't know. I'm sure there's some kind of thing with my trombone where I poke someone with it. Or this is an embarrassing thing with my trombone. Okay, so the little cork at the end of my trombone slide was kind of, it's a 20-year-old trombone. It was kind of like, the cork was kind of falling apart and I didn't know how to replace it, which is silly because it's not that hard, but I just didn't know how to do that for a while. And every time I played, it would like spray spit out the little hole at the end of the trombone slide out onto the crowd. And I would just feel so bad all the time, but like it just would happen all the time. And I don't know. To me, that's embarrassing because it's gross, you know? So I would try to empty it all the time, but then I'm like, hey, everybody, look how spitty I am. It's so weird.
So there's a little bit of guar in working.
Yeah, well. but it's nasty. It's way nastier. Guar is like fake blood, you know. This is like real spit. It's really gross. So anyway, by the way, I fixed it. So there's I promise no spittle is going on anybody anytime.
I'm gonna go with two more questions.
Mm-hmm.
If we played a Working Breed song backwards, and I know this is a loaded question after the first segment, but what would we hear?
Well, we have a track. Well, okay. If you listen to it backwards, what would you hear? Well, so for one thing, we have a weird track on the album that's it's an interstitial track that we can't play live because it's the sound of, I took this plant and I recorded its electromagnetic fields and then they're super tiny. And I took them and I amplified them or I scaled them up by like 10 billion. So they would be in the audible spectrum. So you can kind of hear this like background of the plant's world and it sounds like white noise. And then I made this little speech poem that goes on top that's made with synthesized speech. And we actually recorded it. We like made it pronounce the speech backwards and then we played it forwards. So it's funny you asked the question because originally
what track is that?
So it's the second track on the album. It's 40 seconds long. It's really short. It sounds creepy. I mean, when you first hear it, you might think it's not really anything at all. It's kind of like, but actually it's speech, it's synthesized speech, but because we recorded it backwards and then played it forwards, it sounds like it's like got a kind of an accent to it, but it's actually a poem that's supposedly from the plant's perspective. And he says, I am a sensitive plant, touch my leaves and I will close. And he has this whole thing he says about what it feels like to be a sensitive plant and all the things he wishes he could be, but that he isn't. And so you have to kind of get used to the accent of the plant and then you can understand it. Like once you hear it, you can't unhear it. But It's funny you ask the question that way, because originally I thought about leaving it on there backwards so that if anybody did play it, the song the other way, then they would hear the poem. And then we decided that was just one step too many. It was just a little too abstruse for people. So we should probably just do it so people, it's already hard enough to understand, you know, the direction that it is. So, yeah. So take a listen to track two. It's called Mimosa pudica, which is the name, the scientific name of the plant that is also known as the sensitive plant. And this is like, you probably know this because you teach science to kids, but it's a kind of plant where if you touch its leaves, they close right away because it's like a protective mechanism for the plant. And it's faster than a Venus flytrap, but it's kind of a similar mechanism. The water leaves the cells and the leaves close up on each other. And I wrote this song called Sensitive Plant, which is track three on the album. The lyrics to this song liken myself to a sensitive plant. And the idea is, the chorus is, I'm a sensitive plant, touch my leaves and I will close. The only time I see the sun is when I am alone. And that's metaphorically describing like kind of being a kind of loneliness, kind of loneliness, or also an independence where if I'm bothered a lot, like I kind of close up and I feel only happiest when I'm all by myself, which is sad. And I don't want it to be like that, but I'm a sensitive plant. What can I do? You know, and anyway, that's the point of that song. But it turns out a lot of people don't know what a sensitive plant is and have never heard of one. And so I don't know what they think this metaphor means at all. But so, you know, it's kind of like our album is also a little science lesson because you hear about chimeras and sensitive plants and, you know, cicadas and all kinds of stuff like that. It's kind of silly.
I had no idea before we started talking.
Oh, well, they're really cool plants and, you know, you should check them out. They're kind of neat, plants. And so anyway, so the Mimosa pudica is the scientific name of that plant. And that's what, I recorded and sonified for the background of that Mimosa pudica track. So layers on layers on layers, but you know, it's something that we accomplish all together as a band. Like I've got all these concepts and everything, but it's really the music that pulls it all together. And that comes so much from my bandmates, you know, Jonah Petrelli on the bass and Chloe Wise on the keys. She's got all this jazzy stuff she puts in there. And Jonah too brings some kind of jazzy elements, and he's really good at kind of arranging all the different parts. Like I'll say, oh, I've got this burlesque thing I want to have happen, this kind of like slinky sound that I want to have happen. And over here, it's going to be, you know, like a circus or something. And now I want it to sound like we're going underwater. And, you know, between Jonah and Michael Dugan on the guitar, we kind of arrange these things. And then Chloe comes in with these really beautiful chords and adds this kind of beautiful keys glaze over it. And then of course we have the drums in the background tying it all together. And our drummer right now is Jeremy Popeye, and he does that so well. So I just have to say, like, I'm talking all these concepts and everything, but like I have all these wacky ideas, and then my band is so amazing because they're such amazing musicians, and they also kind of reel me in a little bit. Cause if I like go off on my own, I have a million tangents, you know, I do all this, I go here, I go there, I have all these crazy ideas, and they kind of turn them into reality, which is awesome.
Other than coming to see you tomorrow, how would you prefer that my listeners get a copy of Hieroglyphica?
If they want a hard copy of it, if they want vinyl or CD right now, what they have to do is come to a show, or get in touch with us on Facebook, and I can probably arrange to get one to you some other way. We don't have an online store or anything like that, but, if you go to workingbreed.bandcamp.com, it's available to purchase there. And also, you can just listen to it on Spotify. And actually, what would be awesome is to share it with people if you like it, to, you know, send a track you think is neat to somebody, just to get more people to hear our music. Because, you know, now that we made it, we're like so excited about it, and we just want to want to share it with everybody. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you for spending some time with me on episode 478.
Thank you for having me. This was so fun.
What I need the listeners to do is to make sure they come back each and every Friday and to get the new episode. Next week will be the Borstal Boys. And then I'm not sure who's coming up the following week, but the week after that is going to be Shy Kennedy of Whorehound and her show Descendants of Crom. We're going to talk about that one's been about a year in happening. We were originally supposed to do it for Descendants of Crom 2, but we couldn't make it work. So, you know, just get out there and support the music, because if you're not as into it as I am, you don't realize how underpaid and underappreciated the musicians are.
So. Oh, yeah. That's right.
So I'm going to go off the air and tell Erica about the show. You guys have already heard it a bunch of times. see you next week. Thank you.